This is an interview with Mrs. Mabel Stade and her husband, Hugh. And Mrs. Stade was a Gregor, right?
Right.
And you were born out here in Lincoln Township, right?
Right here, except that the house was over there, burnt.
The house burned when?
Oh, in 43.
2 days before Christmas.
Yeah. It was a little sad, but we get over it.
Yeah. Well, when were you born, Mrs. Stade?
August 3rd, 1909, and the place of birth is Lincoln Township.
Okay, now I'm not going to follow this form because I know enough about you that there are a lot of questions I want to ask you without going by this form. Gregor is a Bohemian name, right?
Well, yes. Mm-hmm.
So your father was Bohemian.
Right.
And what nationality was your mother?
Belgian.
And what was her name again?
Her maiden name was Alice Depree. And she spelt it with a Z on the end instead of a Y.
D-E-P-R-E-Z.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, we haven't run across that spelling before. And where was she from?
She lived at Dykesville.
That's where she was born.
That's where she was born.
And how? And your father was from here, from Lincoln?
Right, but he was born in Bohemia. Yeah, I think he was 6 months old when he came over here. And first they lived in Manitowoc. They were squatters. And then they must have bought land out here and came out here.
So your father was really first generation American, I guess. Well, he was actually born in Bohemia, so
yes.
You are really the first generation born.
Well, my mother was born here too, see. I suppose I'm this half and half business.
Well, that's one of the interesting things that I wanted to ask you about, is the fact that most of the people we have talked to so far have been Belgian on both sides of the family. Mm-hmm. Were you aware when you were growing up that there were different ethnic groups and that you were from two different?
Well, I always knew our nationality. It didn't seem to bother me one way or the other. This was rather a mixed district here. And my mother and dad both talked English. My mother always said to my dad, why don't you teach her Bohemian? And he says, why don't you teach her Belgian? But because they both talked English, we just learned English.
So you didn't speak Walloon when you were...
No, I never spoke any other language except a few words here and there that you pick up. For instance, I knew what a dog was, or in one language. And little expressions, you know, from the Bohemians, but that's about all.
So at home your family always spoke English then?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel, when you visited the different relatives, if you visited the Depreys, was there anything odd about the fact that your father was Bohemian? Was anything ever made of?
No, I don't think so, except the fact that they spoke mostly Belgian. See, somehow or the other, there was more Belgian speaking in that Dykesville area. And when my dad got with his folks, that is with his brothers, sometimes they spoke Bohemian. Well, I didn't understand either of it. That, I think, bothers you a little bit because you love to listen.
Were there anything that we would call today stereotypes? Were there certain stereotypes of the Belgians in those days? Was anything made of it?
No, I don't think so. I can't remember anything that that was scary, you know, about that.
Yeah. Okay. We've gotten into some interesting topics with people when we talk about religion, because the Belgians were predominantly Catholic.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
What were the Bohemians?
This bunch of Bohemians around here were mostly Catholic, with just a little bit of, what shall I say, questioning some things. They were a little bit more to question. On the other hand, my parents, that is, my grandparents, my grandfather, I would say, was very skeptical on religion, but my grandmother was Catholic. Mm-hmm. But on both grandparents on the other side were Catholic.
Were there any Protestant groups around here that you know?
Yes, the Germans. There were the Karestens and people like that. They were Lutherans. And this Lutheran church over here at Rankin was quite active from what I remember, you know. Mm-hmm. I'd say there was quite a few Lutherans.
Well, I do know that also among the Belgians there were some offshoot different groups.
I can tell you a little bit about that. My mother said that she remembered when she was young growing up, there were the people who believed in spirits there, and they had their meetings. And this is the thing that I remember very much about that. She said that when they were small, they'd go and peek at these meetings, you know. And then these very uneducated Belgians would get up and talk, even though, and it was just as though something helped them to talk, you know. And she said they could talk when they never could talk otherwise.
Their language would be different, or?
Yes, different, and she said it was really funny, you know, and of course these kids, for a child to hear this is quite something. And another thing, this was about the time that there was a separation among the Belgians. Wieland, did you ever hear of Wieland?
Yes.
Yes, well, there was a church, I believe, at Duvel. It's down now. I think there is still one out at
Gardner
or someplace out there. And a certain group of Belgians split from the Catholic religion. Some of them came back, some of them didn't. And she often spoke of that.
Did she see Villot?
No, I don't think she did. I'll tell you, there is a certain amount of people who are religious shy away from even having anything to do with other religions. You know what I mean by that? Now, her folks never knew that they went and peeked in. That was something that they did on the side as kids.
Well, we have, there is still a spiritualist church.
Yes,
it's still in existence.
Gardner.
Mm-hmm. And there is also one in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. And we've had some difficulty even investigating it because they're very shy of any type of publicity or anything like this. So
the Fauchens, that's one group that was in on that.
Dr. Fauchen?
It's some religion or some relation of his way back, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was the group that was in Dykesville.
I see.
Dr. Fauchen was up in there.
I know he was, but way back. Now, there's another name that I can't remember very well. That they lived right next door to the, up there to the Depres and then through that Belgian settlement. And that was relation to Dr. Fauchen, you know, way back.
Mm-hmm. Was each of the churches predominantly one ethnic group? Would, like, St. Hubert's Church would be predominantly Belgian, or did the ethnic groups mix in the churches pretty well, too?
Mostly Belgian there.
I would say that Dykesville was so Belgian at that time.
Yeah, but St. Hubert is Rosaire.
And even Rosaire would be so Belgian,
that was all Belgian,
and Lincoln, that it was complete Belgian. See, this was all Bohemian at that time, with a little bit of a sprinkle of German. Mm-hmm. But now, the Belgians have moved in. There's a lot of Belgians through here. And I don't suppose there were too many marriages years ago where there were Belgians and Bohemians, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do know that having talked to some of the Belgians up in the Rosaire area and in Dykesville, back in those days it was commented on if you married somebody who was a Belgian or something like that.
Now Lincoln, that used to be at a church here, what the heck were they? Then after the woman came from Michigan someplace and they turned into their holy jumpers.
That's another group. See, there's a holy jumper group. Well,
that was at Lincoln.
That was at Lincoln, yes.
There was quite a few Catholics turned and joined there.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been a Protestant type of group.
Well, yes, that I think would be a Protestant type. While that Vilot claimed to be the old Catholic. You know, that was the way the Belgians explained it, at least, that he was the old Catholics. So.
Well, when you attended, did you attend the Catholic Church as a child then, or?
No, my dad wasn't very much of a Catholic, so I'm a little bit of one of these, splinters, you might say.
Oh. Well, I just wondered if the services would have been in what language the services at churches would have been in.
Well, as a child, when I went with my mother sometimes,
all Latin.
It was all Latin and English, some parts of it, you know, but not Belgian. I know that in your Bohemian districts, there were Bohemian services. And I think the Germans in the Lutheran churches had German. But around here, I don't know. That would be before my time that they might have had such. I imagine at one time there must have been Belgian services, like in my mother's day, you know.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if the area was predominantly Catholic, it's hard for us now to realize what attitudes in those days were about things like family planning and divorce and things like that. Were they just never discussed, or did people just never question, or how were those things handled?
I would say that there was very little family planning. Oh, maybe 40 years ago, then some people began to question a little bit, but it never was done very much in the open.
Mm-hmm.
Because look at your Belgian families. Most of them had big families. Now and then you'll see somebody, and I know there was somebody who said, well, the priest doesn't pay for this child, so I guess he has no right to say how many children we have. I know there was one man who said that. But this was something out of the ordinary. Most families were large, and
and people just never questioned that.
That's right. And it wasn't, I don't think it was an ideal situation, but that's the way it was.
Did the church at that time, of course the church now is making all kinds of comments, you know, on family planning and this type of thing, but did the church have as much comment in those days to make about this type of thing, or was it really necessary?
I really don't think years ago that there was any mention of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about divorce in those days? I know the Catholic Church has been very strict on that. Were the other groups, like the Lutherans and
you know that 50 years ago, you hardly heard of divorce, you know. There was so little of it. But it has, I'd say that there's quite a few now, you know. And I notice Catholics are getting divorced right along and remarrying, too.
Well, I'm aware of that now, and I know that the traditional Catholic stance has been opposed to divorce, but it seems rather common now without much problem. Mm-hmm. But I guess in those days it would have been so rare that, again, it wasn't much of a topic.
No, but they were, though, against it, you know, very much so.
Mm-hmm. Would there have been social taboos, I guess?
Oh, to a certain extent. There were a lot of people if you had a divorce, they had this grass widow deal, you know. They called you a grass widow. Did you ever hear that expression?
No, I never heard of that.
It's quite common out here. I don't know. You've heard it, you who do. But people did.
What does that mean?
Well, that's a widow that is a divorced woman rather than a, you know, their husband dies, see?
Oh, I see. Yeah, uh-huh. I had never heard that term. I know even where I was growing up, it was strictly Protestant, but divorce was very,
very rare.
And even when I was young, it was still a topic of conversation, you know, uh-huh. if someone was divorced. Now it's, again, very common. But
I have a cousin of mine that was divorced, and I know the rest of the family kind of, you know, looked down a little bit on this person because she was divorced. Now, I happen to have been divorced, too. And at that time, it wasn't easy going. You just stood and you grinned and bared it, you know, and bore it, and that was it. But I think that has changed a lot. Today, people are more broad-minded, and there's no use standing something that's unbearable, is there?
Well, this is what I know, that the church had been very conservative, and mm-hmm. people were very tied to this. But now things seem more open. So this is the thing that we're trying to get at now. You know, what were attitudes 50 years ago mm-hmm. in the Belgian community? And you're in a unique position because you were able to see the Belgian community and the Bohemian community mm-hmm. and give us kind of a view of, you know, how things were between the two groups in particular. I'd like to ask you some questions about education. Now, I know you were very involved in education and taught for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I taught, 6 years. Then I was a librarian, and I brought up a family in between those two things.
Where did you teach?
I taught a school on 57. I don't think that school's there anymore. Highview, that was one school. Then I taught Duval Graded, that one is done too. And when you went down this road over here, and there used to be a little school on that corner there, and that was Greger School, I taught mm-hmm. that one too. And I taught a little school near Luxembourg, it's made into a house now on a hill there. That was U.S. Grant. And that one in Duval was Duval Graded.
Mm-hmm. Well, what years would that have been that you were teaching?
Well, I taught from, about 1927 to about 1931. And then I taught after I was married, about 1933 till 1935.
Were those mostly Belgian children? If Duval, I guess it would have been.
Yes, it was, very much so.
Luxembourg was German and...
German and Belgian, mostly. I don't think there were any Bohemians out that direction.
You?
Oh, yeah.
Was there a language problem?
Yes. I think people those days, I don't think it was only Belgians. They tend to talk Belgian in the home. And of course, when they came to school, there were certain things that it was hard for them to understand. And I think reading was harder for them than it is for someone who's brought up in the English language. Even when you went, now those were the days of the big bands, and we went to dances and we danced. And even when you went to dances, these people were all talking Belgian, you know. And you never understood hardly a thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was a problem, and it was a problem in the schools, too. I remember I was having a spelling class, and this word effort came up. Now, you know the Belgians dropped their H's.
Uh-huh.
And this little boy, he was supposed to give a sentence with the word effort, and he said, "Our cow had an effort last night." And that really happened.
And he was thinking heifer then.
Yeah, heifer. But you see, he drops his H's, so it was all the same to him. And things like that happened. I'd say the kids did not have, they didn't go out so much either. They were more of their own communities. And it's a little bit harder to teach in a place like that.
More clannish.
Yeah, a little more clannish. I remember that first year was a pretty tough one.
Did they speak English? Were you teaching like first grade or all the grades or?
First through eighth. Sure, those were the rural schools.
Well, now, if a child came in the first grade and didn't speak any English, what did you do?
They always spoke some, and they caught on little by little. I never had a child who couldn't speak any English. And usually they came the year before a little while, too, and that helped. And then the older brothers and sisters, I imagine, helped along.
So they would just start out with the alphabet and
mm-hmm.
go from there.
So we got along, and somehow they graduated. Some of them were bright, too. Well, you have that, I guess, everywhere. Some are bright and some aren't so bright.
Well, when they finished the eighth grade, what was the usual course for them? Did they go on to high school, or?
I would say most of them went into high school at that time.
Where would they have had to go, usually?
Dykesville would have gone to Luxembourg. Maybe a few of them might have gone into Green Bay. Some along 57 there. And, like from here, when I taught here, they went to Algoma and Caskill High School.
Mm-hmm. What was the pay like for you in those days as a teacher?
The first year I taught, I got $90. Second year, I got $95.
For the year?
No, that's
a month.
For the month, yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And then, when I taught over here, I got, I think, $95 both years. Because I know I never went higher than $95. And then we had a depression, see, during that time. Then I went to teach in that school near Luxembourg, and I got 65 the first year and 70 the next year. That's the way the teachers had to take a drop. If you get a depression, the wages go down.
Does the cost of everything else go down?
Yes, it did. During that depression, I can remember 6 cent bologna, so you see, things do go down.
6 cents.
No.
5 cents.
What was your training to teach in school?
I had 4 years of high school and 1 year of county college.
And where was that? And
Dora Kiwani had a college at Algoma, and they trained teachers. Yeah, Dora Kiwani. And that was where we taught, or where we were trained.
Which is now the library.
Mm-hmm, the building that's now the library.
But when I went there, it was an old building, and that building burned several years after, and then they built this new one. And of course, now the county college is done, and that building was turned into a library.
Well, so most of the teachers, that would have been the usual for their training?
All rural school teachers, practically, in this area, went to county colleges at first. And then, if you were a high school teacher, you had to have college, regular college.
Where would most of them have gone for that? To Oshkosh, maybe, or?
Oshkosh or Madison. A lot of them went to Madison. My brother here went to Madison, and that was back in, he graduated in 24, see.
Was it unusual for you as a woman to go on to college at all, or to be a teacher, I guess?
Well, there weren't just too many that went on from a district like this. I think in my class, let's see now, I think I was probably the only one that went on to school, you know. See, that's a long time back.
And how did you get into town and so forth? Did you have a car?
Well, no, we didn't have a car those first years. We used to go with horse and buggy to Algoma, you know. And after we did get a car, now let's see, we got our car in 1918 about, and so, I mean, George came back from the Army, 1919, about that time. And then I went to high school and graduated in 1926, so we did have a car. And the first year we boarded in town, I boarded in town, you know, and then I came home weekends, and we came home with a car. And there were winters when there was a group of boys that used to drive back and forth, and I drove with them because I didn't like staying in town. I liked better to drive back and forth. I think I paid them a quarter a day, just think of that. It was a dollar and a quarter a week. And then that one winter, it was a winter much like this, and these boys decided they were going to go back with a cutter and a team. And I drove with them then, too.
Because of the snow?
Yeah.
And the roads, I guess, weren't plowed then?
No, they weren't plowed. We tipped over once with that cutter. And I've never forgotten that because the boys just picked it up and put it back. On we went. So it was a different time, though, than we have today.
When do you think it changed as far as the teachers in the rural districts and the rural schools out here? When did it really change to the consolidated schools and that type of thing?
Well, it isn't just too many years that we're consolidated here. But this is what really happened. When I was a teacher, teachers were willing to make their fires in the morning and work at the boards and do all that kind of work and keep the place clean. The kids swept the place and the kids carried wood for you, and they did all sorts of things. In fact, it was a good lesson in citizenship for them. But then there come a time when the teachers were not, they didn't like the idea of having to make fires and working like that. And when I was on the board over here, and my husband was on the board for a while too, it was hard to get a teacher in these country schools. They wanted to teach in city schools. Mm-hmm. And that's about the time when the changeover came.
To consolidation?
To consolidate. When people got to the point where they were disgusted, they couldn't get teachers, and when they did get a teacher, she just walked out at 4 o'clock, and there wasn't too much preparation anymore, and they felt that they were not getting the best teachers in the country, that the cities were taking the better ones. And then people were for
56.
Was that about 56? And then people were for consolidation. That's what happened then.
Mm-hmm.
See, in 56 we stuck 10,000 in a school up here, and Raymond come back from the Army, and he worked there.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
What school board, was this the Lincoln School Board or the?
Gregor School Board. Each mm-hmm. little school had their own school board.
Each individual building,
yes, you know, right,
had mm-hmm. its own school board.
Mm-hmm. And they had a certain territory, and those children went to that school, and the people every year had a meeting in July, I believe it was, and they elected the officers.
Annual meeting.
And they ran the school.
Where did the money come from to run those schools?
At the school district meeting, the board would ask them to vote a levy, you know, and they'd say about how much they need. According, the teacher was to be paid this, and money for fuel, and all that was figured, and the board had this figured. Then somebody got up and made a motion and says, I make motion that we levy so much taxes. Then this amount is given to the town board, and the town board levies the taxes according to that. See, that's part of the mm-hmm. town board's taxes then.
So it was a property tax?
It's a property tax, yes.
Mm-hmm. So it would be per how many acres of land you have would determine.
And your cows and everything, mm-hmm. your buildings. Uh-huh.
You can put your feet on.
You don't have much
for. I didn't want to kick him.
Oh, he wouldn't care a bit.
Was there any controversy when the schools started to consolidate? Were there people who held back? And
oh, yes, yes. There always are, you know. It takes a while. It's something that, well, people were afraid of higher taxes. And it always is that way.
Especially when you get roped in.
Mm-hmm. Were you roped in?
No, I'd say that this was something had
well,
to
see,
come.
This section went to Algoma, but we got pulled into Casco then.
So now, you're in Casco now?
No, we're in Algoma now. That was all re
at four
extent.
Four high schools in the county. And then one fellow got up, he's dead now, and made a motion before, but the county committee and all that, state committee, I guess, to why have four schools when there's two there, 4 miles apart. So they're now just a three district in the county. And this half, Lincoln Town went to Algoma, and the southeastern quarter went to Kewaunee, and the other was Luxembourg.
So this township really was divided up into three different
right.
school districts. Mm-hmm. I see. Do you think that the Belgians' attitude toward education and higher education and sending the children to school was any different than any other of the ethnic groups in the area?
No, I don't think so. I think your Belgians had quite a bit of respect for education. And the teachers were well respected. This is one thing we have lost today. The teacher was considered somebody in the Belgian districts. And that you were invited into their homes, and they were very nice that way, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you know where, for instance, the Gregor School District, what happened to all the old records from the school district and that type of thing when consolidation took place?
I've got some of them.
Oh, do you?
Uh-huh.
Maybe we could see them or even copy some of them sometime. Or
oh, yes, I'd be glad to have you copy them, sure.
The State Historical Society, of course, we are a depository for the mm-hmm. State Historical Society there at the university, and any old town records, school records, anything like this are invaluable for people mm-hmm. doing research, and so we're always on the lookout for anything like that.
I also have all the teachers that taught here, too, you know, a list of them.
Mm-hmm. That would be very good. And again, we do have copying facilities. We also, as a depository of the State Historical Society, if someone wants to give the records, the original records or whatever, then they are permanently preserved, mm-hmm. you know, as a historical record. So, there was another question I wanted to ask you in this line. When the Algoma Library was